This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast with Andy Benoit and your host, John Engel.
And we're back once again. This is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast, Week 1 edition. John Engel here with Monday Morning Quarterback's Andy Benoit. Andy, ready to get things going, and we have a lot of different storylines that have come our way, and even this last week that I don't think many of us were expecting. First off, with this Wes Welker business over this last day, we have the Broncos playing the Colts in Week 1. And when you see Wes Welker getting suspended for 4 games for amphetamines, I think the first impression was, what? You know?
Yeah, because he doesn't fit the stereotypes for that, I suppose. I don't know what the stereotypes for that would be. But, you know, I had in my mind that he wasn't going to play Week 1 anyway. We've talked about how everything's going to be on the field related that we talk about. It'll all tie back to being on the field. With his concussion scenario, I know he probably was going to play in Week 1, but I'd kind of gotten it in my mind, I'd gotten used to the idea of Denver not having Welker. Again, like I said last week, I don't think this is a big deal that he's out. I mean, obviously, long term it is. If they were to miss him over the course of the season, that'd be a big headline. And I guess it is here because they have the toughest first 4 games of any team in the league. But you know what? All 4 of those games, their opponent has a tougher matchup than they do.
Well, and we, as you said, don't want to spend a ton of time on these suspensions and what brought them on and what the player was thinking, because we don't know.
Yeah,
that's none of our
that.
Business. But first, let's touch on your SI cover story this week. Andrew Luck being the best quarterback in the NFL.
So that means I'm saying he's the best on the field. Is that what
right,
you're...
Right, and you've long been a big fan of Andrew Luck. You were able to meet with him over the offseason. Talk a little bit about your thought process behind the story and kind of almost defend your position, because you're going to get quite a bit of,
pushback.
Am
I going to get pushback
right.
from you?
No,
I mean, it's fine if I do. I'm curious.
Pro Andrew Luck, but I don't know that I can put him at 1.
Well, let me hedge in this way. Let me start off the show by riding both sides of the fence for good measure. I think he will be the best by the end of this season. Heading into this game, I think he's the second best quarterback on the field Sunday night. So I don't want to get too far ahead of myself and saying he is the best. I think he's top 5 now. But why I think he will become the best in the league is for one, his physical skill set is the best in the league already. And people don't think about that because he's such an oafy looking guy that you don't think this is a world-class athlete, but it is, he is. For two, the intelligence is unbelievable, and not just that, oh, he can read the field pre-snap, post-snap. That alone is extraordinary. It's the way he reads the field when things are breaking down around him. He has, Chuck Pagano said in that story I wrote, he said he has a sixth sense for this stuff. There were multiple people in the organization that used that phrase about Luck when I spoke with them. And it's almost uncanny. He just knows how to play quarterback. And it's a little hard to depict on radio. I wish we could have the film here. We could go through a handful of what looked like regular plays and were actually otherworldly plays by Luck, because there are several each game that just have, and that's why everybody in the NFL who I talked to for this story, and even the ones, most of the people I talked to were just off the record, hey, what do you think of the premise? Every one of them said, I agree with it.
So then by season's end, Luck is your MVP.
Luck is a lot of people's MVP within the league. He is the buzz of the NFL right now, and it hasn't caught up with the outside world has not caught up to it yet. And the outside world may never fully catch up. Luck might be one of those guys, and it'd be fun to go through and make a list of guys like this in all sports. We won't do it today, but think about, just listeners on their own can think about certain guys who are ranked higher within their leagues than they are outside their leagues. Underrated guys. I guess you'd call that underrated. Luck, I could see becoming one of those career-long, underrated guys, much like Tom Brady was early in his career, where he didn't have the big numbers like Peyton Manning did, and so there was a legion of people saying he's not on that high level of quarterback.
So then physically, obviously, Luck and Peyton Manning are two very different quarterbacks, but there are some parallels there.
Well, I think the parallels come in more of the mental side of things, but I think you'll see those parallels sharpen and tighten a little more this year because Luck will start running a system. The Colts claim they're going to run whatever gives them the best chance to win, which is what every team claims, and not all of them do it, but they can do it because they have such a diverse quarterback. What that system will be that gives them the best chance to win is spreading out and putting the ball in Luck's hands as much as possible. It's not going to be handing off to Trent Richardson out of two tight end sets.
Well, and this is a great opening test for Luck, too. We talked about the additions the Broncos defense made last season. Are you expecting him to shine against a strong Broncos defense in this week one scenario, or are you not going to try to gauge too much on this opener?
Well, I think when we're talking about guys like this, we're talking about Manning and Luck and this top echelon quarterbacking class, I think you always expect them to shine. So I would expect some wow plays from Luck. I'm really curious to see how they come out and play, because I think they will become a spread offense like they did become down the stretch last season, I don't know if they'll do it right away. I wouldn't be surprised if they do, but I could see them being a little stubborn and trying to do this whole establish the run and be a balanced approach and all that stuff, which you can still be balanced playing out of a spread system, by the way, and you can still spread the ball, throw the ball around the field playing out of running personnel as well. So it's not just a matter, I guess, of how they come out, but how much of the game do they put in Luck's hands, and in what ways is the game put in his hands?
Well, and we love to sing the praises of Luck, though, but he is still a young quarterback. So what are his deficiencies still? What does he still have to improve on to be that number one quarterback you see him being by season's end?
Well, and yeah, he's only 24. He'll be 25 heading into week two, though, so he's almost 25. That's still very young. The deficiencies, you know, he made a great point to me when I was visiting with him, because I asked him that myself, he said when he was actually was a different question, so it comes roundabout, but he said when he was early in his career, his first and second season, there was a lot of, when he was reading the field, it was from the standpoint of what is our play, what are we trying to do, and only understanding the game from his own perspective, which is normal for any quarterback, young quarterback especially. Now he's transitioning into, okay, what our play is, that's second nature to me. What is the defense doing, and how does our play relate fully to it? And I think he needs to become a little quicker in that sense. And how we'll notice if he's quicker in that sense is how he progresses from one progression read to the next, how smoothly that goes. Sometimes he can be a little choppy. There's some hiccups from getting from A to B to C to D, and that's the difference between Luck and Manning right now. Manning, there is no choppiness, unless he's playing the Seahawks, I guess.
Well, and we go from two very, very elite quarterbacks with this Colts-Broncos matchup, and then again in the NFC South with the divisional matchup between the Saints and the Falcons, Saints on the road against Atlanta. Drew Brees and Matt Ryan, that's quite the pair, too, and we get that week one.
Yeah, and we got that week one last year, if I recall.
I think we did.
Yeah, and that was before we knew that Atlanta wasn't
the collapse,
going to be Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah, and they actually weren't Atlanta in that game because Roddy White was well under 100%, and it showed throughout the game. And so now Matt Ryan has a healthy Roddy White. We think he has a healthy Julio Jones.
We
no
hope.
Tony Gonzalez, but I think they'll be fine without him. And this might be, if anybody has a prove-it year at quarterback, Matt Ryan might have the most prove-it year in the league. Who would be above him besides the usual? I mean, you can always say Cutler. You can always say Romo. Is there anybody else that's needing to prove
Not
themselves?
After last season. But does Ryan really need to
prove
it? Because of the consistency of the numbers has been, I mean, that's every year for Matt Ryan. You're going to get around 4,200 yards through the air, and That's just Matt Ryan.
30 touchdowns, maybe right. 12 picks, something like that. A few more picks, actually. He needs to scale those down. He will throw into coverage at times, is why I say every quarterback would like to reduce their interceptions, but some of his are the bad kind where he gets fooled. I guess what I'm saying is we're talking about prove-it guys. I think he has a chance to become a top echelon QB. I'm not saying it'll happen. You can only put about five of those guys in a category each year, but he's not done to me. I think most people would rate him as around 10 to 12 in the league right now for his ranking. And I think he could get up to 6 to 7, maybe 4 to 5 at some point. He's got to do it, though. He's got to do it quicker. And having his targets back will help. His offensive line's a big key, too, because Matt Ryan does not have the strongest arm in the game. In fact, he's a lot like Drew Brees in this sense. And Brees is a guy whose arm strength has gotten greater each year he's been in the league, and it's not so much anymore because he's in his 30s now. But when he first came in the league, his arm strength improved each year, which is rare to see. But neither guy's a cannon-armed guy. And so when you're not a cannon-armed guy, you need to have room to step into your throws. You can't just sling the ball all over the yard. Ryan has not had that room consistently because his offensive line has not been, it hasn't been porous, but it hasn't been firm. There's too often his pocket collapses. The Saints have invested heavily in the inside of their offensive line for that same exact reason. They can't afford to have a pocket collapsing because Breeze can't see over guys, and so he needs room to step into his throws. So both guys are similar in this sense, and also both are similar in that they read the field extremely well, and they have a command of the offense. You can run no huddle very effectively with either quarterback.
Well, and when it comes to Matt Ryan leading this Falcons team, they not only need to improve, they have the new difficult task of even a stronger division with the rise of the Bucs, who you've picked to win the division.
I have, and I've gotten some pushback on that. Look, someone pointed out to me that I'd picked the Bucs to win the division, and I said the Saints in their preview. I guess I'd said they were the best team in the division. I did say that. That's the most. They're the most talented team in the division. Coming into the season, they're the best team. I think the Bucs and Saints are going to finish 11-5, both of them. And I'm picking the Bucs as a tiebreaker. I mean, it's predictions, though. You know, well, let's not take these two seriously.
So if they're both at 11, well, we don't need to take it seriously. But if they're both at 11-ish wins in your mind, that puts the Falcons at what, 8?
Yeah,
8-8.
It has to. Yeah. And if the Falcons came out and won 11 games this year, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think a lot of people would. I have some questions about their defense, though. I think they're extremely weak in the middle at the linebacker position, not just middle linebacker, but the whole linebacker position. They don't have I wonder if Thomas Dimitroff regrets letting John Abraham get away. Because Abraham, while he got old, he didn't look old in Arizona last year. He had 11.5 sacks, and it wasn't a cheap 11.5 sacks. Some guys will rack up sacks based on the system. He was the cornerstone of their speed rushing designs. Atlanta has never replaced Abraham, and they didn't have a guy like that before he came in, and that's always hurt them.
Well, and he was the face of that defense for a long time, too, just like Darnell Dockett was for Arizona before he went down.
Yeah, and so now Abraham's having to carry the load for Darnell Dockett.
So you just don't buy the major changes there in New Orleans that it'll make that big of a difference?
Well, I mean, what major changes are we looking at?
I mean, addition to the defense with Bird and just, I don't know. I feel like the overall feeling isn't with the Bucs anymore like it kind of was a month or two
ago.
Yeah,
the Saints have kind of become
some
people.
Seems like the Saints are the sexy pick now.
Yeah, the Super Bowl pick even for some. I like Bird as an addition. I think what it tells you is that Rob Ryan really values interchangeable safeties, and they're going to play three safeties on the field like they have in other years with Roman Harper there. Now Harper's gone. Bird will be one of the safeties. Kenny Vaccaro, who I love, I hope he stays healthy because he can play the nickel slot or he can be a rover, whatever you need from him. He'll be the other safety. And then Raphael Bush, a fierce hitter, that's their third safety. He'll play the Roman Harper role now. That Bird signing spoke volumes to me about how important the safety position is to them and to their whole defense and what they do schematically, because they had a pretty good one in Malcolm Jenkins already, a pretty good safety, and they let him just walk away.
That was surprising.
Well, and they paid a lot more for Bird, and I don't think Bird is that much better than Jenkins in relation to what the salaries reflect. I mean, Bird's getting paid, Jenkins is getting $16 million over 3 years, something like that, 15.5, and I think Bird got $25 million, 26
yeah,
guaranteed. So Bird's a huge investment. This is from a team that did not have a ton of salary cap space, so That's a commanding statement saying, look, safeties make or break what we do. We gave up one that could already play like a cornerback if we needed him to in Jenkins, and we got one that isn't necessarily a slot corner type but can do everything else. And that tells me that they've got big plans for what that everything else will entail.
Well, and it's interesting that we've already spent these first 10 or so minutes talking mostly about the quarterback play in these two games. Sticking with quarterback play, though, big quarterback signing, or extension, if you will, just a couple days ago with Alex Smith getting the 4-year extension from the Chiefs. We've been keeping an eye on Alex Smith for most of the offseason, too, with the Kaepernick extension and then Andy Dalton's extension, and thinking that these all had something to do with each other. And then you look at Alex Smith's deal, and it's very Alex Smith friendly.
It is. He got a lot more than I thought he would get overall. And they play the Titans this week, which will be a fun game. These teams played in week 5 last year, if I recall. And that was a fun game as well. Kansas City took it because Kansas City was undefeated through the first couple months. Maybe I haven't made it clear on this podcast, but anyone who's read what I write and has heard me on other radio shows knows what I think of Alex Smith. I think he is a caretaking, game-managing quarterback. And it's become really chic to say that Alex Smith is much more than that. In fact, my boss, Peter King, did the best job I've seen of anybody arguing that case this week. And what Peter pointed out was the numbers were huge in the last 4 games of the season, and then in that wild card game that Kansas City nearly beat Indianapolis in. I think that was, I hate to say this, and it sounds like, oh, he's not giving him a chance. I think it was a function of the system. Going back and watching the film on those, the Chiefs did not ask, and they've never asked, Alex Smith to be a progression read passer and to step back in the pocket and win the game for them. They make very defined reads in their play designs, a lot of screens, a lot of quick slants, a lot of either-or options, which you see off of play action, and Smith just makes the correct decision consistently. Now, look, that's a game manager. There's nothing wrong with that. That's good coaching and that's good quarterbacking, because you're doing what gives your team the best chance to win the game. But you're not building around this guy. We're not describing a franchise quarterback either.
Well, and I don't think anyone really thinks there's a whole lot of improvement left for Alex Smith.
Like, yeah, good point.
That his ceiling is much different, and that I think that is kind of reflected though in a 4-year deal that'll put him at 34 years old by the time it's over if he makes it through the deal. And I think that's what the Chiefs see, is there's not a lot of options elsewhere, and that this is the guy that can maintain a good team for the next 4 years, 3-4 years.
You know, I met with a lot of people from the Chiefs this offseason, and I was expecting, these were the coaching staff, these are the guys in charge of Alex Smith. I mean, this was high up and throughout the staff. And I was kind of expecting, it was off the record, and I was expecting them to tell me, yeah, you know, we do game plan around Alex Smith and all that stuff. They genuinely like him there. I was surprised. And I wanted to argue it a little bit more, but I was meeting some of these people for the first time. They genuinely like Alex Smith there, and good for them. That's what every team wants to be in that scenario, in that situation.
Well, and the Niners liked Alex Smith too.
I'm not so sure about that.
It seems like his coach has always raved about him.
Well, okay, publicly.
Well, I mean, okay, yeah. But it doesn't seem like Alex Smith has had a lot of disconnect with coaching
staffs. Let me put it this way. The Niner decision to start Kaepernick over Smith in that organization was perceived as almost a no-brainer. That was 2 or 3 years ago now.
As in there wasn't indecision in the coaching rooms?
It's Kaepernick all the way.
Interesting.
And if you look at the skill set, that makes sense. And that's, by the way, you could make a point that both scenarios are showing the coach's belief in themselves. And by that, I mean, if you put Kaepernick on the field instead of Alex Smith, obviously Smith reads the field a little better than Kaepernick. Not a whole lot better, though, because, again, we're talking about game manager type reads. But he is better than Kaepernick in reading the field. He's a better decision maker. So if you're putting Kaepernick on the field, you're saying we can teach the guy how to read the field. And we can design plays that favor him. If you're putting Smith on the field, you know that there are some limitations. We talked about Matt Ryan and the arm strength. Alex Smith is even more so in that direction in terms of needing space to step into his throws, doesn't have a gun. If you put that kind of guy like that on the field, you're saying, I am very confident in my ability to design offense and schematically get guys open. And Andy Reid, I've never seen a coach in one offseason tacitly declare such confidence in his own ability to design offense. And maybe Doug Peterson, their offensive coordinator, has a say in that as well. But this is a team that just extended a caretaking quarterback, and B, did not go out and get him any receiving help this offseason. And they had a very below average group of receivers to begin with. So they're going in with that. you only do that if you believe you can get those guys open by design, because those guys aren't getting themselves open. So Andy Reid's really, he more than anyone, he's bet on himself this offseason.
Well, and that was going to be my next question for you, is outside of Dwayne Bowe, who even in himself isn't what he used to be.
Not close.
Where is that ball even going?
It's going to Jamal Charles.
Well, I mean through the air.
Well, no, that's what I mean.
Too.
Jamal Charles.
No more Dexter McCluster. He's going to be across the sideline from them in that first week.
Yeah, and McCluster was a big part of their movement concepts, pre-snap movement. If you go back and watch that Indianapolis wildcard game, they had McCluster go in motion, I think, every single pass play. And a lot of the run plays as well. And they were wanting to get him a clean release off the line of scrimmage and all that type of stuff.
They really wanted him to work.
They did. They tried, and it was multiple staffs that tried and multiple front offices that tried with him, which makes you wonder why Tennessee signed him. Tennessee must want a move guy as well, but they have one in Kendall Wright, and it's a different type of player. McCluster, my guess is they'll have him come out of the backfield a little more, but even if so McCluster wasn't, we all agree he wasn't as good as they'd hoped, correct?
Right.
But even with that, he still offered dimensions to an offense that not every player offers, that very few offer, in fact. Being able to be that poor man's Percy Harvin and line up anywhere and be a move player. That's a big element of play design, because the Chiefs, more than any team in football, featured misdirection concepts last year. You go one way, you throw the other way. And that was Alex Smith, because he's mobile and because he reads half a field pretty sharply, he was excellent in that kind of a scheme. Well, you take away from that as well. I don't see this. I think the Chiefs are destined for a big step back this year. I don't see this working again this season.
Oh, yeah, I don't have them in the playoffs.
No, I don't. I think I've got them at 6-10 or something like that.
So third in the division, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And then, 6-10 is always good for third in Oakland's division.
Well, and there were some losses. Yeah. There were some losses on defense, though, too.
Yeah, there were. The Chiefs lost. In fact, they're going to get, I think Peter said they're getting compensatory picks.
There you go.
Yeah, geez.
You just get around
they're
to it eventually.
They're getting extra draft picks next year because they've lost 7 free agents that warrant extra draft picks.
So the pity picks.
The pity, yeah. Thanks.
That's what
well,
I like
no, because
call.
Some of those picks are mid-rounders. But I guess you do get them, because that means you lost a good player, so that is pity, yeah. They've lost some they lost cornerback Brandon Flowers. They lost safety Kendrick Lewis. They've lost their second inside linebacker, I believe it was Akeem Jordan last year, along with Derek Johnson. But now they've got Joe Mays in there now. That's how I know they've got a new inside linebacker. And they lost defensive lineman Lawrence Jackson. So that's a guy at every single level of the defense. And I get the sense Tom Bahali is going to take a step back as well, and that they kind of are sensing that themselves because they drafted D Ford in the first round.
Well, and Alex Smith's former team, the Niners, they've been all over the headlines in this last week as we've kind of gotten ready for this podcast. When it comes to the Niners and the Cowboys in this week one matchup, the Niners went from one of the favorites in the NFC just a month or two ago, I guess even with the Navarro Bowman injury, to a team with a lot of questions.
Because Aldon Smith is now
Aldon
out.
Aldon Smith, and nine games.
That suspension was huge.
That's a big one.
Did you see that coming?
Well, it was a combination suspension, though, wasn't it? It was like we took 4 games for...
Oh, was
this,
it?
Yeah, it was 4 games from, I think, the substance abuse, then the misconduct, and then, you know, it was like a puzzle piece.
Okay, that makes... I wish I'd read what you read, because that explains how they got to 9, because I don't think I've ever seen a 9-game suspension. I guess Roethlisberger, they chose 5, though, for conduct a few years ago, so they do odd number of games before, but... that's enormous to lose him because, obviously, I mean, anytime you lose a guy of that caliber, it's enormous. But Aldon Smith was their main driving force behind being able to rush only 4 to the quarterback. And now they have Vic Fangio, their defensive coordinator. He's been very good at designing 3-4 blitzes throughout his career. So I think they can survive this, except that their best blitzer was Navarro Bowman. So you've taken out 2 of your 3 best front 7 players, or maybe 2 of the 4. They had a good front 7, didn't they?
Because
they still have Patrick Willis and Justin Smith. But you
well, and there's some questions with Justin Smith, too, because he had to miss some practices during camp.
I wouldn't worry
you think
too
he's
much.
Fine?
I mean, that guy played through a torn
he's a scary
bicep,
dude.
Torn tricep, something like that. Tricep, yeah. I think it was, down the stretch 2 or 3 years ago. He wasn't quite the same guy, but Justin Smith is what they call country strong throughout the league, and that's country strong.
He looks country strong, too. Yeah, I think he's a good epitome.
Remember when
image.
He was came in the league? People forget this. He came in as a 4-3 pass rushing defensive end.
That's right.
In Cincinnati, number 4 overall pick out of Missouri, if I recall, and he didn't begin to work out there. Or at least he didn't work out there. He had a 7.5 sack season or something like that. But have we ever seen a guy transform so distinctly from being a high level guy or a high end pick in one role? 4-3 defensive end's very different than a 3-4 defensive end. Have we seen that kind of transformation before? I'm sure we have. I can't think of anybody.
I can't think of anyone. If you can't think of anyone, don't look over here like I'm going to pull one out.
Well, they're going to need Smith more because we haven't need Ray McDonald. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, I was just going to get there. Is that this defensive side of the ball, which the Niners have been so great at for the last 3-4 years, it hasn't ever been an issue. And now Ray McDonald gets charged with some domestic abuse,
felony
domestic
too.
Violence
yeah.
issues. And Jim Harbaugh comes out immediately and says we're going to allow due process, but if someone's convicted of domestic violence, he's out. So it's a strong stance, and a lot of people will commend Harbaugh for making that stance, but then it leaves the Niners in an interesting spot as well.
Well, and let's see. I mean, Harbaugh, that's a great stance to make, but you can also point out that Chris Culliver, their starting cornerback, he's under investigation, or he got charged or something this offseason for threatening a teenager with brass knuckles. And that's not domestic exactly, but that still falls under the same realm.
Well, and Aldon Smith, I mean, we talked about him. He has enough reasons for a coach
right,
to be
but
like.
But Harbaugh's making a hard line on domestic violence involving
that, right.
women and children. So I don't want to drag Aldon Smith into that, but I know what you're saying. But the other guys, Parrish Cox was involved with an incident with a woman a few years ago, and obviously he has cleared the legal process. But there's a blurry gray line here with this kind of thing, and it's going to remain blurry and gray probably for a while because these things do. And so Ray McDonald will probably be on the field for them that whole time because not everybody knows Ray McDonald, but he's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good football player. And he's there. He can penetrate gaps, which you don't always get out of 3-4 defensive ends. He understands their stunt and twist concepts extremely well, which is big for their 4-man rush tactics. And they're going to need him. Now, they do have, to their credit, they have developed their backup defensive ends a little more over the years, in part because they're planning on sharing the load of Justin Smith's load. But Tony Gerard, Eddy, and DeMarcus Dobbs, those are not bad backups to have if you need to fall back on them at some point.
Well, and if you're Tony Romo and the Cowboys, who, as we mentioned, they're facing week one, you got to be a little pleased that you might not have to face the entire force of this Niners defense. And the Cowboys are a team where on defense you go, I don't know how they're going to stop anyone. And on offense you hope they can score quite a bit of points. But when you look at Tony Romo, Dez Bryant, this offense, DeMarco Murray, are you optimistic for the offense and just a little scared for them whenever the ball's going the other way?
Well, you have to be because it's a firepower offense. I mean, Dez Bryant is – he's a double-team over-the-top, every-down type receiver. And there might be, we can name the other guys, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, and Calvin Johnson. I think that would be it, talking about every-down over-the-top double teams. So that's a true number one in every sense of the word, every sense of the phrase. Tyron Smith, I think, will emerge as the best left tackle in the league this year as well, which is good. You know, I'm not high on offensive linemen because I think you can get by with average linemen. But certain quarterbacks do benefit more than others from great offensive lines. Peyton Manning doesn't need a great offensive line. I think Tony Romo is a guy that does need a great offensive line because he likes to go sandlot. He likes to extend the play. He works out of the structure of the play often. And that kind of thing requires space to throw and good blocking and extra time.
Well, and that must be why they give Smith that big extension too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you weren't surprised by that when that happened, as I remember.
No, I was surprised at the length of it. I mean, 10 years is a long time, and obviously it's not going to – I guess I can't say obviously, but it probably won't go the whole 10 years. But if you can get Tyron Smith long-term locked up, you do it.
On the other offensive line for the 49ers, there is some good news in all of this for the 49ers. Alex Boone is back with the team. They settled out the contract issues.
Yeah, they gave in to him.
Yeah, big time.
I thought
the Niners were a no-budge kind of team. That's what it seemed like with Vernon when Vernon was kind of playing with the holdout thing.
Vernon had a different scenario, though, I think. Vernon Davis was reaching further in his asking for new money.
Well, and so having Alex Boone back there, are you happy that they settled this out, or do you think they would have been just fine moving forward? And
I don't think they would have been just fine because it also had gotten rid of Adam Snyder. Joe Looney, their fourth-round pick from 2012, would have gotten the nod had Boone not been there. That's a significant drop-off because I thought Boone had a pretty good season last year. I haven't liked him in other years, but last season I liked him a lot. I thought he had by far his best season.
Well, he would probably agree with you. That's why he asked for $3 million.
Yeah, great point. They need stability at right tackle because Anthony Davis has been out of training camp, so they might have to play Jonathan Martin there at some point, even if it's Anthony Davis. He's not the sturdiest pass protector at times. And then they're going at center with Daniel Kilgore, who has not been on the field a whole lot. So it's a different offensive line than before. And, if Boone had been gone, I think it would have been a downgrade. And this is a team that has really relied heavily on its power-blocking O-line. And that's another example where my point about you don't need great linemen, you can get by with average ones, that falls through. That's not true with a running-based team. And the Niners are a classic running-based team, and it's probably because of this line more than because of their backfield.
How much of the losses on defense, does that factor in a big change in your impression of the Niners when you look at a divisional outlook in that NFC West when you're looking on towards the end of the season? Is this
– And you mean as a whole collective team? Because we're talking about the running game. I assume you're tying the running game defense
everything,
and all that.
Everything.
Yeah.
But how much of a change is there in the way you look at the Niners from the last game of the season?
Well, let's look at it this way. We've covered both sides of the ball. And in every case, almost every case, we've talked about this team getting taking a step back, getting worse in some facets. So and we haven't even mentioned the secondary, which is not as deep at cornerback as it was in past years. I think this team has taken a step back. I'm not ready to put them out of the playoffs yet, although...
But it's much more of a maybe than it was a few months ago.
Yeah, of course. I'm the guy that I picked him to miss the playoffs last year, and I got toasted on Twitter for that.
Well,
so maybe I'm a little gun shy on that. But if I had to redo my predictions now, I'm trying to remember. I don't believe that when we did the SI Magazine predictions, I don't believe we knew the Alden Smith suspension length at that point. We maybe found it out right before we went to press. The reason I'm wondering out loud is because I can't imagine I predicted the Niners to make the playoffs knowing Alden Smith would be gone 9 games. If I did, then it was a toss-up between the Niners and Bears, and I guess I went with the experienced team there. But the way I feel heading into Week 1, knowing everything we know now, I feel like the Bears are a more talented team than the 49ers.
Well, and they haven't had to deal with this kind of offseason that the Niners have had to
deal
with.
Right, the Bears it's reason, and we'll maybe get to the Bears later in the show. They're playing Buffalo, so there's no urgency there. No offense, Bills fans, but there's a lot of good games this week.
Right, and that one of those good games, too, is right there in the AFC East. The Dolphins are hosting the Patriots. You don't always think a big game, good, exciting game when you talk about the Miami Dolphins, but the Patriots and Dolphins have been intriguing for years now.
They have, and Miami beat them last year.
They always seem to kind of know what to do to Tom Brady.
They do. Remember, what year was it? I was a senior in high school, I think, so 2005, that the Patriots went 14-2 that year or something like that, and one of the two losses was to a two-win Dolphin team.
With it was a Monday night game. Bright orange jerseys.
Yep, that's right. It was a Monday night game in Miami.
Tom throws an interception to end the game, I think, something like that.
He tends to do that in the Dolphin games. I know he did that last year. Then he was a desperation play, so it's not like Brady lost the game for them. New England's a better team. I think Miami, though, is a playoff caliber team this year. And I know you and I have talked about that, I guess, off air before. Yeah.
Do you think they're a 9-win team, possibly?
I think they're an 11-win team.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's... 9 wins, you can't. Yeah, nine. They were almost 9 wins last year, weren't they?
They were 8-8.
Okay, and they face planted down the stretch. We'll check. I mean, whatever. They were middle of the pack, and they face planted down the stretch. But I don't see that happening. They're an older team now. Fewer distractions. You're right. 8-8, and And look at them, look at their losses here. Two losses in a row at Buffalo and then to the New York Jets. They would have made the playoffs if they won one of those games.
Well, when you look at the Patriots, a lot of people are already starting to pick them even over the Broncos in the AFC. Do you have the Patriots over the Broncos?
I do because I
feel like that's hard to do.
Well, let me defend Miami real quick, and then I'll tell you why I think New England's a better team. I like Ryan Tannehill. I think he does everything right as a quarterback. The stuff I say about Andrew Luck applies to him just on a much lesser scale, but it all still applies. He makes the progression reads. He has a physical skill set. He can extend plays. He can get rid of the ball quickly when need be. He's the complete package of a quarterback. It's not as great of a package, but it's a full package. They have him in a new system now, working with Bill Lazor, who was a quarterback's coach in Philadelphia last year. That worked out pretty well for him, by the way. And they also have a revamped offensive line, which I don't think – it's not a great offensive line still, but this is what I mean by you can get by with an average line. I don't think it's going to be as big a deal because they're going to be getting rid of the ball quickly in Lazor's scheme. Although I've heard that some people think there's going to be a lot more seven-step drops and deep stuff than expected because of Mike Wallace. I'd be surprised if that's the case. They may think they're going to do that, but once you start having to call the games for real in September and make, you know, it's not preseason, it's not training camp, you start doing what gives you the best chance to win, and it's not going to be going deep to Mike Wallace. It's going to be getting the ball out quickly to Brian Hartline and Charles Clay. And
well, they have to feel like Mike Wallace has been underutilized since he came to Miami.
He's underutilized because he can't do everything. He was overpaid. It's not underutilized, it's overpaid more than that. I don't believe – very rarely are guys underutilized because we forget, John, that the coaches are with them every day in practice. The coaches don't forget that guys are on the roster. Fans think, oh, they forgot about him. They didn't play him. They're not giving him a chance. They're not paying attention to him. That's hogwash. They're with these guys 10 hours a day every day half the year. They know what these guys can do, and if they're not getting him involved, there's always a reason for that behind the scenes, or they know something we don't know. So Mike Wallace wasn't able to do everything they asked of him last season, and so therefore they stopped asking him to do so many things.
Well, and I know you're not really a gambling man, but if you look at the AFC East and predict a possible, if there's anything that happens to Tom Brady this season, the Dolphins would be that clear-cut divisional winner.
I think they could even be there. Yeah. Oh, clear-cut, yes. I think they're even in the discussion with Brady healthy. I think New England will win it. But I just talked about the Dolphin offense. I think the Dolphin defense is the best defense from player 1 to 11 in the AFC East. And I know the Jets are very good. I know the Bills are very good. The Patriots are taking a step up this year, and that's why I like them to win the division, because while the Patriots might not be better than the Dolphins' defense, that offense is much further along than Miami's offense.
And when you look at the Patriots, what do you think this instant impact of Darrelle Revis will be? I mean, it was a big get for them.
Huge get. Because they never quite trusted Tlaib all the way, and maybe that's off the field more than on the field. It probably is, because Tlaib was sensational for them last season, but they didn't want to give him a long-term deal. I wouldn't either. I'd give it to Revis over Tlaib. I think anybody that's watched the NFL in the past 5 years and has watched these guys off the field would do the same thing. What a cornerback like Revis does, for one, the Patriots have become a man-to-man-based defense. Belichick doesn't do these crazy schemes and these hybrid blitzes anymore.
And Revis is perfect for that.
Exactly. Belichick used to do those schemes back when he had a slew of veteran smart guys who also couldn't move extremely well. He had Vrabel, he had Brewski, he had Rodney Harrison late in his career, Ted Johnson, guys like that, Willie McGinnis. And they were smart and intelligent, so he was able to do a lot of stuff with them. Now he has athletes, and they're less experienced athletes, and so he simplifies and is willing to lean more on his raw talent that he has. And so you play basic man-to-man. And when you play basic man-to-man, you've got to win on the outside. Or you've got to win inside if that's where the best receiver's going. Darrelle Revis not only allows you to win against number one receivers, but he's so good. What the value of a true shutdown corner is that it's not just, you know, they can win against these number one receivers. It's that everybody else on the defense knows they don't have to pay any attention to Revis. And they can truly look away and focus their energy elsewhere. And when you do that, you've got more energy you're focusing, and it's on less players and less area of the field. So it's all more – you become a more explosive defense. It's just mathematics.
And with the Patriots, are we expecting to see Jets Revis then?
They are, because they're paying him.
Are you?
Yeah, because I thought he was good last season in Tampa Bay, and he was used more in a zone capacity. And he was good, not great, but that's not his skill set. I thought he moved well, and he has said he wasn't totally comfortable then. That's not the issue now. He's comfortable because the knee is fully healed. So there's no reason to think that you wouldn't see – there's not no reason to think, but it's more likely you will see it than not see it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Just by following logic. He's only 29 years old, too, so – this theoretically is the heart of his prime.
Well, and when we look at this Patriots-Dolphins matchup, this is fun week one because of the divisional implications here. And also with the Bengals and the Ravens in the North, you have that same divisional matchup where these are two teams who are vying for playoff spots. The Ravens, a team that lost out last season. The Bengals, a team a lot of people think will win that division or get one of the wild cards at least. When you look at this game, do you see some major signs of this being a big game for the North title as a precursor to what we're going to see later in the season?
It would reason that it is because of just the nature of how the North plays out. I think that AFC North from team one to team two to team three might be the most even division in football. I don't like Cincinnati heading into this season as much as most people.
I don't either. I picked the Steelers to win that division.
Yeah, and no one at our SI picking pool or whatever picked the Steelers.
Everyone's low on the Steelers.
Astounded me. Yeah, I'm a little – I haven't gone to the playoffs. I'm really high on Baltimore. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. I guess they're a contender because I think they'll win the division. I think they're the fourth best team in the AFC and the best team in that division. I like their defense a lot this year.
So you think Kubiak's really going to do some good things with that offense that struggled last year?
Yeah, I do think he'll do some good things as well on offense. They have receivers that can't get open against man coverage on their own. And so you need Kubiak's installing a zone-oriented, play-action, moving pocket-type system, which means there's going to be a lot of crossing patterns. That's the great way to defeat man coverage.
Much like you saw in Houston.
Yeah, a lot like you saw in Houston. And the key for this offense will be whether the running game can pick up and understand the system. They've been in a zone scheme themselves in recent years, but not quite like this. I wouldn't be surprised if Bernard Pierce becomes their best running back this year, well, just because I think he's a little better than Ray Rice at getting outside, and Kubiak's scheme is mostly an outside. It's so heavy on the outside zone concept.
Well, and the big thing you addressed first was them picking up that scheme as running backs, and with that four-week delay that we have, four-game delay now with Ray Rice, right?
Two games.
Is it two games?
Two games,
that's
yeah.
Right.
It should have been four.
Should have been four, right. So Ray Rice does have a little bit of a learning curve there, but so you don't even think he's going to get that starting gig back? You
think? Well, I think he might get the starting gig back, but I think Pierce will wind up being there more effective. Where I wouldn't be surprised, let me put it that way. You can do more with Rice still. Rice, if he becomes Ray Rice again, and he...
2009 Ray Rice.
Well, that's a little far back. I mean, 2011 Ray Rice, okay. Even 2012 Ray Rice. Whatever, just not 2013 Ray Rice.
And so this when you look at the Bengals, too, we're spending a lot of time on the Ravens. A.J. Green is there with Andy Dalton, who got that big contract like we talked about. And the defense...
Another caretaker getting a contract,
And the defense in Cincinnati is very strong, and you look at this division, and it doesn't seem like there is a lot of separation. So I like this, though. When you can't really separate the teams in the division, this is fun for us.
And AFC North is a fun division because these are smash-mouth games between
every single
these
one
three
of them.
Teams. Yeah, and it's the Ravens and Bengals games last season were a lot of fun to watch.
And then when you tie in Pittsburgh, that's the next game that we even wanted to talk about, Pittsburgh and the Browns, another divisional game.
Yeah, I mean, AFC North galore at 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Exactly. It'll be jam-packed. You can just do your last four channel changer. But with Big Ben, Pittsburgh hosting the Browns, who, as we know, Brian Hoyer will quarterback that first-team offense. He'll be the starter there. The Browns have now been kind of written off, Josh Gordon looking like he won't be around for what looks like a year. And the Steelers, who have sort of been written off themselves, even with Ben Roethlisberger.
Or underwritten or something like that. What really interests me in this game is the Browns' defense against the Steeler offense. So we've talked before about the Steeler offense, and maybe there are better weeks to get into it, but Roethlisberger, I think, is at the height of his career right now, and I think Antonio Brown's a true number one, and I'm big on Le'Veon Bell. And that offensive line is a lot more stable than it has been. So I think the offense will be very good in Pittsburgh this year, potentially. There's not a lot of depth.
Well, and the defense looks good, too, though.
It does. But I think Cleveland's defense looks really good. I think they're going up against a very good Browns defense this week. And it starts with Joe Hayden. We've talked about the ability to play man-to-man. And how important is that for Mike Pettine? Not only did they have Joe Hayden, they went out and traded up at one point. I guess they traded back, but then they made sure to trade up to get Justin Gilbert at cornerback. So they've got two man-to-man corners, much like Pettine had with Revis and Cromartie when he was the D coordinator with the Jets. And Pettine, by the way, I've heard was the guy behind the Jets defense more than Rex Ryan.
Wow.
In terms of Sunday game planning and calling the shots on Sunday. Rex Ryan, it's his philosophy. He taught it to everybody. But Pettine's the one that really executed it for them on Sundays. So I think he'll be excellent as a head coach in overseeing this defense. I love the moves they got at cornerback. I like that they got Dante Whitner because you need a smart safety to run all your multiple stuff. They do a lot of safety blitz concepts. They interchange their safeties, much like we talked about already with the Saints and Rob Ryan. It's the same philosophy. It's, you know, you're coming from a Ryan brother still philosophically. And then I like Carlos Dansby as another acquisition at inside linebacker because he's smart, just like Whitner. You can do a lot with him, and I know for a fact they're going to do a ton of blitzing with him. And he was an excellent blitzer in Arizona.
Well, we'll know if this defense is anything to be proud of right off the bat, too, because they get to go up against that Pittsburgh offense.
And they're going to need that defense, too, because the Browns offense is not going to score more than 20 points in most games.
Okay, then I have another question for you, because Antonio Brown is one of the elite wide receivers, route runners in this league. Mike Tomlin has said that they will still use him as a punt returner because of his ability to be dynamic, and he stated this week that if he's our best option there, we're going to play him as a punt returner. This just seems crazy to me that you can risk putting some of your best athletes out there on special teams like Earl Thomas. I mean, we saw Pete Carroll say that Earl Thomas will return punts, and we see that Randall Cobb will still return punts in Green Bay.
And we'll see if that holds up all season long.
It can't, though, right?
I'm surprised that Antonio – I'm always surprised to see Antonio Brown play as much as he does on special teams, but it's worked out so far for them, and most likely it's – Tomlin's a defensive guy. He came over as a D coordinator from Minnesota. The Steelers have long been a defensive team, and so they probably view punt return as an extra valuable asset because it factors into field position, which is a defensive-minded philosophy.
Well, and he averaged over 12 yards per punt
return.
Yeah,
he's a good punt returner.
But when you draft Dre Archer, I mean,
I agree.
It seems like
John,
a very good option to put back there, especially on special teams where a guy goes down. It's not good, but it's not the end of the game. Losing Antonio Brown for the Steelers would be big.
It'd be interesting to see how often guys punt returners actually do get hurt. Because my guess is maybe it's less than we think. It'd also be interesting to see how guys that return punts, if it correlates at all with their receiving prowess. Because I've never played football. I don't know how taxing it is to also return punts if you're always running routes. I have to imagine it's a little bit taxing. I mean, it's obviously a little bit. I have to imagine it factors in, though. At the end of the game, you could tell if you were a receiver that is used to just playing wide receiver and all of a sudden you return punts for a game, I'd have to believe you could feel it in your body that you also return punts that week.
All right, Andy, before we get to these Monday night games, let's get some quick hitters as we move through these final Sunday games. Vikings and Rams, no Sam Bradford. It doesn't look good in St. Louis.
And I think they can, if any team could survive it, like we said last week, it would be a run-oriented Rams game. This game might be over in 2.5 hours because both of these offenses are going to be pretty run-oriented.
Right, and you mentioned that, especially with Matt Cassel being the chosen starter over Teddy Bridgewater with the Minnesota Vikings. Jaguars-Eagles, you have Nick Foles coming in as this prodigal son, I guess you could say, in Philadelphia, where he puts up incredible numbers. We've talked about it before. Chip Kelly sustaining his potent offense, does it happen, and can you even tell a sign of regression against the Jaguars.
I knew you were going to take a shot at the Jaguars. This is not a defense to just cast aside. I mean, remember, they went up against a good Broncos offense last year. And
finished the season well, too.
They finished well, and they gave that Broncos offense at least a contest for the first three quarters. It's a better Jaguar defense than people realize.
And I tried to give you a hard time with Derek Carr tweeting at you that he was named the starter. You didn't even respond.
Did he tweet at me?
No, I tweeted at you because of my love for Derek Carr. And you didn't even, not even a favorite or retweet or anything.
I didn't catch all the Twitter stuff this
just
week.
Don't worry about it. So Derek Carr is the starter in Oakland. The Raiders choosing to go with him instead of Matt Schaub. Going on the road with the Jets.
Yeah. How's that for an intro?
It's going to be a fun one. I mean, we'll know right off the bat if he's a Raiders quarterback or a good one.
That
was rude.
That was rude. Maybe. I'm not surprised by the move. I think the Raiders coaching staff was probably a little bit nervous about playing a rookie, but I'm not surprised that they went in this direction. Schaub didn't look good in the preseason either.
No, he didn't. And Bears are hosting the Bills this week. Sammy Watkins is back with Buffalo, and the Bears seem to kind of get forgotten in this NFC North conversation with Green Bay, who looks to be a little retooled and ready for another run.
This is the game I'll be watching in the early window hour on the big screen in my house because the Bears' coaches' film camera angle is so deplorable that I try to watch their home games live so I don't have to watch their coaches' film.
Well, are you going to write a letter or something?
I've made it known, haven't I?
Yeah, here's a gripe.
I'll write whoever I need to. I actually talked to one of their coaches about it, and he said they built a luxury suite where the camera was supposed to go, and the NFL owns the cameras, I guess, for the coaches' cam or something. And so in order for them to get the coaches' angles they need, they'd have to buy out the luxury suite, and they deem that not worth it.
That much just ruin your Tuesday afternoons.
It does. Imagine, he said they get used to it over the course of the season.
Okay, our last couple of games on Sunday. Washington is visiting Houston. The new RG3, hopefully, pocket passer, Jay Gruden.
I can't wait to see how that looks.
And maybe he knows how to slide.
How many times do you think they'll use the pistol? Over, under three?
I'd say over.
I'd say under. I'll say under.
Interesting.
Also, Jadeavion Clowney's dude. Yeah, I can't wait to watch this game.
And J.J. Watt, fresh off that mega deal, working out at 4 a.m.
Yeah, we'll see if he still has the fire. I'm sure he will.
That's right. And then the Panthers at the Bucks. We hear that there may be some problems with Cam Newton's rib, even though he's playing through with that hairline fracture.
That could be an issue in my mind because I think you need your ribs to throw. Like, I think you need Newton, and obviously you need your ribs to throw, but to throw mechanically. And Newton already has some glitches in his mechanics. I could see a rib injury exacerbating those issues.
Well, and the Bucs also are without their offensive coordinator, possibly. Tedford being hospitalized.
Yeah, we'll see. That's the interesting game for both teams. These are usually fun games.
Interesting
too.
Start for Lovie Smith, then, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Andy, and then finally wrapping up with our slate of Monday night games, we have the Giants and the Lions. Ben McAdoo, this new offense, hoping that Eli Manning is the quarterback that a lot of people have expected him to be in the past. Last season, we didn't see the best out of Eli Manning, and partly because of that receiving core.
Oh, largely because of the receiving
core. You always remind me of that. It sometimes slips out of my mind.
They were deplorable, and that is probably a big reason why, I'm sure that's a big reason why, Ben McAdoo is here now, and that they wanted to change, because they didn't just change coordinators, they're changing systems. And the system has not looked good with the starters in the preseason, but you know how I feel about that, and the Giants claim to not be worried, and so I we'll see how it goes in a real game that counts here. Eli Manning, it'll be interesting to see if he is a quick timing, get rid of the ball type guy, because he's always been very good getting into his progressions, which is different from quick timing, getting deep in his progressions, and with throwing late in the down with guys' bodies coming near him, guys in his face. So he's not going to have to do that as much this season. But when you're throwing those quicker passes, obviously you're giving up something. This will be less of a downfield offense than we've seen.
Well, and a guy like Victor Cruz benefits from those quick passes.
Yeah, he would be very
good. Even Reuben Randall can do well with that.
Yeah, Randall's got to sharpen his route running, though. There's no system that allows for sloppy route running, but he's going to have to get quicker initially in his routes.
Speaking of quick wide receivers, the Lions, Calvin Johnson speaking about...
Isn't that funny that we're talking about a 6'5", 230 guy?
He's quick
wide.
He's like LeBron James.
It's totally legit. He is like LeBron. What do you got?
When Calvin Johnson was talking to the media this week, he said that this is their best chance to win a title this
season.
Yeah,
whatever. That's
look at the Lions. He's not wrong. This could be the best chance they've had since he's been there.
Maybe he's slamming past Lions teams.
I don't think that's hard to do.
Yeah, no. I don't really care. Every guy on every team is going to say something like they feel good about their title chances this year. I don't care about that.
Do you think that having Reggie Bush there is going to help at all with that?
It helped last season. I think what's really going to help is having Joique Bell along with Reggie Bush, which they also had last season. But I think they're going to have it even more this year. They're going to do more two-back concepts because those guys were very good together when they played together last year. And you have Reggie Bush go – almost always he'll go on the direction of the field that Calvin Johnson is on, because then you eliminate the underneath double-team aspect of Johnson, because you've got – those underneath guys have to be focused on Reggie Bush. And if they focused on Johnson, Bush is going to get open in the flats, and he's killer there. We've seen that before. When we saw that the Dallas game comes to mind where it was the inverse of this, where the Dallas Cowboys linebackers did react to Bush and Johnson killed him on quick slants. It's a great combination, and then you add tight end Eric Ebron to the equation as well.
Well, and when you look at the Lions, they could be one of those maybe wild card teams out of the North.
Every year they are, though, right?
Yeah,
don't
I guess
they seem
so.
Like that? I remember I Robert Klemko last year was sure about the Lions, and I don't mean to throw him under the bus because I think he made some good predictions too, but every year there's somebody that beats the lion chest, you know?
Right, no pun intended with a line. I don't know why I thought that was.
No, that's gorillas.
I don't even know why I thought that was a pun. All right, our last game of the week then, the Chargers on the road against the Cardinals. Phillip Rivers, is he going to complete 70% of his passes this season? He was pretty darn close last season.
He might. He's in his second year in that offense. And I was one of the many who rolled their eyes when
Mike McCoy
said that before he'd ever, you know, McCoy said that back in spring of his first year on the job as the Chargers head coach. I was wrong. McCoy was right. Rivers came just short of 70, but he was 70 most of the year. And I think he's going to be better this year because he's got a deeper receiving core now. They're going to use two tight ends there with Antonio
Ladarius
Gates
Green.
Is still pretty good. And then Green, Ladarius Green, the number two tight end, who's actually more flexible than Gates.
People are really high on him this offseason.
They should
I feel
be.
Like I've only heard Ladarius Green all offseason.
He came on late last year. He had some games. I believe the Bengals game was a particularly impressive one for him, or one where he played a lot. He had a touchdown that game, if I recall. But Keenan Allen's the guy to watch. He's going
the
to
dream.
Be...
Keenan the Dream.
Keenan the Dream. Is that really, is that what he goes by?
I think so. I've heard that. I've heard that flying around.
He will have, I think he'll be 90 catches, 1,300-yard type guy. Top five receiver in the NFL this year, production-wise.
And you think the Chargers can actually challenge for that division?
No.
Not even close?
No, because Denver will have about four Keenan Allens, most likely.
Well, maybe three if Wes Welker doesn't come back in time, huh? All right, that's all we have this week. You can follow us on Twitter and join the discussion at Andy_Benoit for, obviously, Andy, and at Ingles Angle for myself. John Ingle here with Monday Morning Quarterbacks. Andy Benoit, this is the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys, and Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.